My name is Janny Bazemore.
Thank you, Miss Bazemore. And can you say where we are?
As far as what, on Hampton Avenue in Newport News?
Yeah.
That's where we are, just several blocks from the coal terminals.
Mm-hmm. And just before we came out here, your daughter wiped down the chairs for us to sit on, and the wipes came back really black and sooty looking.
Exactly. And it is coal dust. I mean, I'm quite familiar with coal dust and how we used to have to wipe things, even in the neighborhood when I was in Ridley Circle.
Mm-hmm.
So,
when did you live in Ridley Circle?
From 1953 until about 1970.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left and moved to Washington, D.C. And then in 1982, I moved back to Newport News.
Mm.
And at that time, my parents were still in Ridley Circle. And they still had a coal dust problem.
Right.
Yeah.
What was the coal dust problem like when you were living there?
Well, we had a lot of environmental issues over by Ridley Circle. But at some point, there was always the trains loaded with coal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. At that time, it was like blocks of coal that would be, my understanding was that would be in the train cars. Then at some point they came with coal dust piles, and it was just really high mounds of coal dust. I don't know if they had put in a new system or something that was, you know, loading the coal or whatever, and the dust was coming off, but it was piles and piles of coal dust. And my mother would complain many times because it was getting, it would get into, at that time we had clotheslines on the outside, and it would get into your clothes. But the biggest complaint was when the wind would come up, we would see clouds of dust, of coal, over by the terminals.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that at one point they put up the, I think it must have been when some other coal company was also moving in. I know Old Dominion, I think it was called Old Dominion. If the wind would come up, like for a storm or something like that, all you could see was black cloud, just black dust. And they were talking about building the interstate. And she said, well, what's going to happen when they build the interstate and the cars are going by and the storm is coming up and all they're going to get is these black clouds?
Your mother did?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who'd she say that to?
Yeah, basically to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because she would have discussions with different folks in the community about the coal dust and all. Because I think she was, my mother served on as the president of the Ridley Circle Tenant Council for probably about 15 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
So
during what time period would you say, if you could estimate?
Probably from around 19, was she on there when I was, I'm going to say prior to my moving back, she may have become the tenant council president up until about something like 1990, from probably around 1980 to probably 1990,
mm-hmm.
maybe something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But she was a quiet advocate. She didn't make a lot of noise, but when things of importance came up, she would speak out about them. But in the neighborhood, even when we would be playing and stuff like that, you would get in the grass and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Instead of getting green grass stains, you would get black stains. I mean, you would get the green, but you would also get the black. So it had been a problem for years. Like I said, because at first it was the trains that had the coal dust over there. Then when they bought in those other terminals and they had piles. And it was only after they actually put in the interstate system that you could actually drive by and see what the piles look like. You know, before that, only if you went, you know, walked that area over there by Terminal Avenue or whatever, could you maybe see them. Mm. So,
how did you know that the dust was from coal then, if you never saw the coal? Or you saw it coming on the trains?
Well, because it was black dust. I mean, you know, if it had been sand, of course it would have been a light color. If it had been anything else. But that was, I mean, we knew that the coal terminals were there, and that basically that's what you were getting. Mm-hmm. So.
And so that photo that you have in your hand,
mm-hmm.
That photo of your mother was taken during her time as president of the Ridley Circle Tenants Council?
Yes, I think she would have been council on then, yes. And this was, this article is dated January of 1985, which it surprised me because I thought it was even before that,
mm-hmm.
but it says 85.
And could you, would you describe the photo?
Well, it says that Ms. Bazemore shows coal dust she cleared from the inside of her Ridley Circle home. And she had basically taken the cloth when they came there, mm-hmm. and rubbed her windowsill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she got from the windowsill. And she said she had cleaned the windowsills 2 weeks prior. And this is how much was back on the windowsills. I'm not going to say which company it was. I know it had to be more than one company over there, but they met several times with officials from the coal terminals. And I think that's how the sprinkler system came about, because, you know, she had several meetings with people relating to the coal dust. And she did, I remember her telling me that they were talking about some kind of sprinkler system so that when it looked like it was going to storm or the wind was going to be high, then they would be able to turn on the sprinkler systems and try to keep some of the coal dust from going all over the city, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, one of the things that I think they did to appease the neighborhood, it would be like at Christmas time or Thanksgiving. Donna's shaking her head. They would give them free turkeys. You know, they would they would come with all of these turkeys and say, you know, hey, happy Thanksgiving or Merry Christmas or whatever. And of course, I would tell them, That's not a big payment for what we have to go through for the with the coal. So you all can't just, you know, act like you're satisfied with that. Tell them you're going to take the turkeys, but, you know, you were going to keep working to get this problem resolved.
So is the coal terminal gave the turkeys?
Yes.
And they gave it to just the residents of Ridley Circle?
Well, then they would give, yeah, they would give the tenant council, I guess, is, you know, a representative number of turkeys, and they would just pass them out until they were gone.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Was that every year?
I don't know how many years it was, but I do recall at least 2 years of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. So did your mom, she talked about going to the meetings, like, do you remember her saying who else was at those meetings? Like, was city council there?
I don't recall all. I know that our minister, was Henry Maxwell. W. Henry Maxwell was the pastor at the church that we attended. And so I know that he and my mom would have discussions. And he's actually mentioned in this article. He was at that time, excuse me, he was at that time, I think, the delegate for this area on the, what is it, in our legislature up there? I think he was, let me see what they say. Huh?
In the General Assembly?
In the House?
He was a delegate at the time. Because I see the reason that's, because he became a senator later. So he was a delegate at this time. And yeah, he was at the General Assembly. And, you know, I know that they would talk because she also became a foster grandparent volunteer at our church. And so she would be down there almost on a daily basis. And yeah, of course they had conversations about it. But I'm not sure. She was also on the Human Rights Commission. So I'm not sure whether it was that delegation. Because I remember a man that she talked about a lot. I can't call his name now. But he was part of, I think he was the excuse me, I think he was the director, basically, of the redevelopment and housing in some way.
Authority, right.
And I can't think of his name. She's called it all the time. But I know that he and she and some others would meet with the with some of the officials over there.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have been part of that human rights. It could have been part of the meeting as the tenants and the tenant council. It could have been. I'm just not sure now. It's been, what, 40 years? So.
Yes, it has. Wow. Yeah, so the Human Rights Commission was a city commission?
Uh-huh. Yes.
A citywide Human Rights Commission?
Yes.
Okay. I've never heard of that before.
They have one now.
Oh, they do?
Ask
okay.
her.
Oh, you're on the Human Rights Commission?
She's on it.
This is good to know. Of course you're on it. You're on everything. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, because I've been trying to find documents from city council meetings where they were talking about installing the sprinklers, because I heard from somebody that they also talked about doing other things, like putting up a barrier or a dome or something to control the coal dust.
Uh-huh.
And so I've been trying to find those meeting minutes where city council talked about it. And you know, like knowing the names of people who might have been in meetings with them, or like dates and that kind of thing, is like, you need, like, I need that kind of information to guide the search, because like they don't know what they're looking for when I'm like, you know, go to city council and asking for these old documents from like the 80s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You should have come about 2 years ago. Because after my mother passed away, of course, I had the wonderful duty of going through all of the stuff for her and my sister. They both passed. And I knew it was a lot of human rights documents here.
Wow.
And they went out.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know, there was a lot of old paperwork, and everybody convinces me that you can't keep everything, so I had to get rid of some stuff.
Sure, yeah. Sometimes.
And that's why, you know, when you get rid of it, that's when you want it or need it.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
But yeah, because that had names, especially on the Human Rights Commission. I know that had a lot of the names of the other people that were on the commission and all of that at that time. I didn't take pictures of it or anything, so.
It's okay. Hopefully there's a copy out there somewhere. And if not, that's also fine. Yeah.
I cannot think of his name. It'll come to me at some point, though. Because I know that they, I think this man met a lot with them. And that it was probably those are the people that went over, or they, sometimes I know Old Dominion people would come over and talk to, they came over and talked to the tenants. Tenant council meeting. Because that's the kind of stuff she did. She would bring people that could bring information for the tenants and all.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And the Ridley Tenants Council was like reported or like had a connection with the Redevelopment and Housing Authority.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I know they did a lot of meeting. They did a lot of work in trying to accomplish something. Because my mother had gotten to, we had a tornado in Ridley Circle. They wouldn't declare it as a tornado. They said it was high winds. And that was in 1968. And where was I going with that?
The tenants union.
It'll come back.
The Redevelopment Housing Authority. That relationship.
Yeah, I mean that was much earlier than all of this. That was in 1968, April 30th, 1968. As a matter of fact, it was another anniversary yesterday for that one. But they didn't declare that a tornado, but it landed the whole lumber yard up in front of the doors, basically. Mm-hmm. And 2x4s and all of that through the roofs. I think that is a lot of stuff that started some of her advocacy for the tenants in Ridley Circle. And it wouldn't surprise me if she wasn't there in the 70s. I'm not sure. Maybe I can go back and see if there's something that has some dates for something. So what is? Is there other?
Yeah. Did you or did anybody in your family ever have any breathing issues, respiratory problems?
Yes, my youngest brother, who was 15 years younger than myself, had a lot of kind of asthmatic kind of, most times they said bronchitis kind of stuff. But when he got older, it went away. I mean, it didn't bother him as much, but he had hospitalizations and stuff like that.
Did he stay when
go ahead.
When those problems went away, was he still living here?
Probably not. He wasn't living in Ridley Circle. He wasn't living in that area. Is he? He, when he left, he moved up to the northern part of Newport News. But it was other kids around that were having, you know, difficulties, like asthmatic type, in the area as well. And I would say it was, I won't say that it was, you know, a lot of it going on. But I do know that you could go out some days and it was like stuff was getting in your nose, in your nose passages and all of that. Mm-hmm. Because we would sit out a lot in Ridley Circle. We had the trash cans that line your back door, and everybody would come out in the evenings and we would be sitting around. And you know, like I said, we had a lot of environmental stuff going on, because along with the coal dust stuff that we had over here, the lumber yard had a big, giant, tall incinerator over there, where they would burn, I guess, the sawdust from the woodworkings and stuff that they were doing. This may not have been a good idea, all of this traffic.
Oh, it's not
bad. That just to put an idea where that the lumber yard was, it's in between 14th and 12th Street on Jefferson, right?
It was between 16th and 12th Street. 16, let me get the bearings again, because it was, ooh, it looked strange to me over there.
So we were parked at
14th Street.
That was 14. Mm-hmm. So going back would have been 12th Street.
12th Street, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the huge incinerator. Is that the one that caught on fire?
No, it didn't. It didn't really catch on fire. You're talking about those gas containers.
I'm not sure. When we were at the tea party today, some elders were talking about the fire and gas.
They were talking about gas tankers.
Like the Exxon tanks that were down there.
Really? Of course, it was Exxon.
Caught on fire, 1958. I think it burned for several days. I'm thinking almost a week. That scared us to death, because they kept talking about it getting to one of the bigger tanks, and if it did, and it would explode, and the stuff would probably come into the neighborhood. And I was just telling us some all kind of stuff that wouldn't let me sleep at night at 8 years old.
Was there ever any type of remediation, or did, after it happened, did anyone ever come to you to talk to you about the health effects, or what it, you know, why it happened, or just
try not to? Not to my knowledge, because like I said, I was 8 years old at that time. But I don't recall, and I was a little nosy child, all right? When they would say, this is adult conversation, I'm like, oh boy, let's get the goods. So, but I don't recall anybody ever coming to say anything, as far as, because it was just plumes of black smoke that was all over the neighborhood. But the incinerator, basically, I would say, is from where we lived, I would say the middle of that block from our house was this big, tall incinerator. And at night, you could see the fire, because it was like a screen on the top. so you could see the redness of the fire. And on top of that, you could see the embers coming out, or whatever else stuff was flying coming out of those screens. So, like I said, we had a lot of environmental issues over there. But I know there were some adults in the area that were having respiratory issues. I can remember about 3 or 4 adults that would be coughing and you know, just kind of but you know, whether or not they were smokers or anything else, I don't know. But I know that they, you know, would have these coughs and stuff like that.
What about like heart disease and COPD?
I don't know whether these folks that I'm talking about had COPD or not. I mean, it wasn't a term that I knew back then.
That's fair.
So, you know, most of the time they just said they got an upper respiratory infection or something like that, they would call it.
Mm-hmm. So. And it would, the coal dust affected, like, your laundry. You talked about that.
Yeah, people would hang out, you know, especially like they would hang out the clothes. We didn't have dryers, and people hardly had washers, but we didn't have dryers in that complex. So I mean, it was routine to hang out your laundry, mm-hmm. and especially your whites, like your sheets and stuff like that. Sometimes you could see some of the soot on it from the, you know, we say soot, but it had to be the coal particles, mm-hmm. that was probably getting on your clothes. Mm-hmm. And most of the time they would shake them out and dust them off and mm-hmm. fold them up. That was it. You can go back and rewash them. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah. It would affect that as well. So.
In your dream world, if anything was possible, what would you like to see done about the coal dust?
Well, I don't think it's going to go away. It hasn't gone away in all of this time. So there has to be some kind of shields or something that they could put there to try to keep it confined. You know, we're not talking about the distance of miles from where the homes are. So, and before they tore down Harbor Homes, those houses were pretty much right up almost against the, couldn't have been more than a block from those homes. Mm-hmm. But if there's a way to shield that coal dust, because the sprinklers, although they may have kept it down some, it's still not doing the job of keeping it confined. So I just know it's not going to go away because there's money involved. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think that in the dream world, they would have something that could actually contain it and keep it there instead of it flying all over. Because here we are, we're on Hampton Avenue now, and we are, what is it, 4 blocks that way? So 4 or 5, I'd say, no more than about 7 blocks going that way, and then maybe over a few blocks. But we get a lot of the residue, mm-hmm. right here on Hampton Avenue. Mm-hmm. So that I think is what would help as far as residents and all are concerned. Because it, you know, like my mother said back there 40 years ago, she said, if this is getting on our windowsills, if it's getting in our houses, it's getting in our lungs, you know? And you know it's right. So it just wasn't, I don't know that anybody was ever diagnosed with black lung disease in this area, like the coal miners, you know.
We actually did hear one story of somebody who had that, her sister had that diagnosis.
Really?
Really, yeah.
14 years old.
Really?
Yeah, a child, a 14-year-old child.
Oh, my stars, okay.
She said she had her lung amputated. She had a lung taken out as a 14-year-old.
Well, I do know my girlfriend's sister, she basically grew up around this area, but she was further down, 22nd Street, and she ended up with a lung disease. I don't think they didn't call hers black lung or anything like that, and I don't know that it was affected by coal dust or whatever, but it was a lot of folks around the area deal with, I heard of people dealing with sarcoidosis or something like that?
Sarcoidosis.
Yeah, and some of the people that I knew that dealt with that lived over there on 16th Street across from Dunbar School, mm-hmm. and they were in that area, so. Mm-hmm. I don't think they ever really did any kind of study or anything to see if people were affected or how they were affected. Because they didn't care. It was money being made. And so what? Collateral damage. I mean, that's the way the folks in the money feel about things, you know. I guess that's why I don't have money, because I didn't want to feel like that. But it, I mean, basically, that's it. They don't. It's as long as money is being made, you know, somebody's got to suffer the consequences. And in this neighborhood, this is mostly the African American or black or whatever people call themselves. I call myself American. You know, that's the area where all of this is conjugated. That's it. Mm-hmm. So what? It's kind of how people feel. Unfortunately. This lady was a fighter, and anything in the neighborhood, they say, take it to Miss Bazemore, take it to Miss Bazemore. So, yep, she was one of those quiet advocates for everybody. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she saw a need for things, and she went out and fought for it. So. Unfortunately, they tore up the parking lot that she had, that she eventually got the tenant, the redevelopment and housing to put in really circle, because all we had was this little street parking where, you know, cars parked on both sides and then everybody had to squeeze through.
Oh, wow.
So she finally got them to take a field that was over there and build a parking lot. Mm-hmm. So. Don't tell anybody that it was my idea. But I just hope to see them be able to do something to confine the dust. So if that's feasible.
If your mom was still here, what do you think that she would have to say about it?
Well, I guess she would probably say the same thing that I've said. As long as there's money involved, you know, you're not going to always get what you, you know, what's good for the people. So, she basically had not stopped. My mom passed when she was 86, and she was still under her own power. And she pretty much, she had just started to kind of have maybe some dementia. But before all of that, she was still, even after we moved here, she was still very active in trying to get things done. So, and she wanted to be a foster grandparent, because she always wanted to get her hands on children at a young age to try to develop their minds and make it positive, you know. Because she would always say that no matter what circumstances you come out of, changes could be made if you got in there and did the fight. So... yeah, and I think about that a lot, because she was all about the youth, although she would run Michael Vick out of the which she would say, I don't know why y'all always want to come in front of my door with that football. But yeah, she was the kind of that. The younger you get them, the better, you know, because you can shape those young minds and everything. And, I mean, we would see people, especially the children that that she would have contact with, and we would see people out in the shopping centers or the stores or whatever, and it was always Grandma Bazemore, and... I'm so glad to see you, and thank you, and yeah, you know, kind of thing.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But I had a sister like that too. Both of my sisters were like that, because my sister served in Scouts for over 30 some years before they passed away, and. So I guess that kind of rubbed off from Mama, that if you can get them and shape them at an early age, you know. But yeah, I have a family of fighters. So. And I know that she would basically say, I cannot believe that they haven't done something more about the coal dust, you know. But